this week's show, Clarifying the Story with Cameron Page from Clear Story. All right, Nathan Wood, we're back on the mic again. You got that 25 AEC Integration Summit on there today, showing that off, last year's event, but probably the most comfortable of the t-shirts. How's it going, man?
Repping it. I got to put on a golf shirt after this and brush off all the rust and see if I can go play, what is it, 18 holes? How many holes do you play in golf?
You play 18, and everybody listening now.
It's been that long.
It's 18 holes or it's nine.
I think we're playing 18. I don't know. I got dragged into it last minute.
Well, enjoy.
Nice. I'm jealous.
Enjoy the swing. And that is Cameron Page from Clear Story. Cameron, what's happening, man?
A little bit of everything. It's a crazy time in the world right now. But yeah, excited to be on with you guys.
Where is the Clear Story office? Where are you coming from?
Yeah, so we're in Walnut Creek. I mean, our team's all over the U.S. We've got about 95 people now. But we have a HQ here in Walnut Creek, which is just outside of San Francisco.
Right.
So I'm calling in from HQ. Yeah.
Calling in from HQ. Got the hard hats in the background. We'll get into it all. Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. But before we get into all that, you guys know the drill. Come on. YouTube.com/@TheConTechCrew. Follow us on the socials. Like the show. Share the show with your friends. If you're interested in getting on the show, well, find one of us on LinkedIn. Find one of us on those socials. Or better yet, tap us on the shoulder in person, and who knows, you might be the one that gets on the show. You know that moment when you're buried in submittals, the electrical contractor swears they're working on the latest set, the mechanical disagrees, and nobody can find the same detail? Bluebeam solves that problem and more with Max. Stitching pulls together every discipline's drawings into a single continuous view. So architects, engineers, and contractors are finally looking at the same thing at the same time. Wild concept, right? Flag issues before they cost time and money. Find what you need fast and stop herding cats across 100 sheets. Same Bluebeam you trust, just way smarter. Free trial at bluebeam.com/trymax. All right, we're back. Cameron, it's been a long time a-coming. I think we were talking in the pre-call. We started talking about this at a groundbreak years ago. And then, you know, it took a little serendipity to get back here, but we're back here. So tell everybody a little bit about you and your history in the business.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, it's great to finally be on. It'll be fun. I've been in construction my whole career. I've always wanted to build things, you know, and back in high school, I was applying for colleges and a college counselor told me there was this thing called construction management. And I was like, that sounds like something, you know, that would fit my interests. And so I'd never worked in construction and no one in my family was in construction. So I had this lucky sort of epiphany where I was like, if construction management is the major, that means I'm going to be managing construction. And I was like, I should probably have done construction at some point in my life. And so I grew up in Sacramento. My mom actually found this like trades program where they're taking high school kids as apprentices and getting them into the industry. And so I joined a commercial wood framing company and started to end high school, worked there for a couple summers, which was really great. And like, I still encourage anyone who's like, even in college, to do something like that, to actually wear a set of bags, swing a hammer, like understand what it's like to work on a field crew. So I did that for a few summers and then I studied construction management at Cal Poly, graduated in the amazing time to graduate with a construction degree in 2009 when the market was like completely crashing. And it was wild. I mean, tons of my friends had gotten offers were getting rescinded, people were taking bartending jobs. You know, it was an interesting time if you guys recall. But I was lucky enough to get a job with a company called DevCon Construction, which is the largest builder in Silicon Valley. So started there as a field engineer and I was there for 9 years and great company to work with, tons of like kind of upward mobility to take on a lot of different work. And so I was doing everything from small tenant improvement projects to ground up corporate campuses, kind of everything in between. You know, first I was always like forward thinking on tech. So I was always like an early person adopting new software tools and trying to make my process better. But at the same time, I was also a little bit frustrated because I was like, not every tool is really solving the biggest challenges that I have. And so my biggest challenge was always just, I wanted to understand our cost exposure. And for a general contractor, that's change orders. You know, we have a little bit of direct costs on our projects, but for the most part, we subcontract. And the volatility there is what's changed. And for me to understand my change exposure, was quite the manual effort. And I would ask for sub for change order logs from every sub. I had to, you know, frisk my superintendent to make sure he hadn't signed any T&M tickets that I wasn't aware of. Then we had to reconcile everything. And obviously we had project financial software where we were trying to house everything. But the question was always, do I have everything in there? And so that was kind of the idea behind starting ClearStory, was creating really a business network for change orders. So whenever a sub sent me a change order, it was logged automatically. I didn't have to go hunt it down later, and we had complete visibility. And so, yeah, launched ClearStory in 2018. You know, I was like, hey, I've managed subcontractors my whole career. How hard could it be to manage an engineering team and like build software? And turns out, especially with the tools back then, it was actually quite challenging. And so learned a lot, which was actually great because it obviously broadened my worldview, and I got to learn a whole bunch of new stuff and a totally different side of the construction industry. So yeah, but we, now it's crazy. You know, we've been at ClearStory for 8 years now, which is pretty wild, and reached a scale that, you know, I thought would be maybe like where we would get to. And now we're thinking obviously beyond that. And so yeah, it's been quite the journey. But yeah, and here we are on the Contact Crew podcast.
Yeah. I mean, all the way back. I love the advice to get out on a job site in the summer. I'm actually having the same conversations with my son right now about, like, you know, he's been doing landscaping, and then it's like, do you do food and beverage? And I'm like, well, you might want to know how the real world lives, and, you know, hard labor and going out and carrying a bag and doing things and learning how to install stuff is pretty key, not just now, but into your future. And it gives you an idea of how the world is built. So I think that's sage advice to anybody, especially given, you know, you don't have a family history in it. So, you know, we hear that over and over. Oh, well, I was exposed to it by my grandfather, I was exposed to it by my mom doing things. And now it's, you know, so how do you get exposed to what the world's going to look like when you get there? And then at DevCon, how did that help you at DevCon in the beginning? Like, once you get out of school, a lot of we see this all the time. People get out of construction management and it's like, you don't really know how the work gets done, do you?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think to your point, it's just great grounding for anybody. Even if you don't go into a career in construction, like having worked on a crew, and I mean, construction is a people industry, and that's like the main thing that matters with anything. But, and especially going into a general contracting side of the business, but even if you're in a specialty contracting side of the business, like the amount of stakeholders you interact with every day is the widest range of, I think, any industry, right? And so if you're a project engineer or field engineer starting out, like you're going to be working with your superintendent, your project manager, the client, the architect, and then all the field crews that are like actually installing the work. And every single one of those stakeholders is completely different background, completely different way of communicating. And so, yeah, I think being on that field crew gave me a lot of like understanding of how the industry works, particularly how the field perceives messaging from the office and at what that dynamic is really like. And I think it's really good grounding for anybody.
I mean, this is exactly what I was going to ask about, because the whole arc of your progression from, you know, working in a trade for framing contractor to then working at a GC to then building software that I think was primarily trade contractor kind of focus. But now I think it's progressed into having a GC function, right? Like, tell us more about kind of the progression of the product itself and kind of what problems within the larger world of change orders you've attacked and how it's grown.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's the thing, is like change orders are sort of the nexus of like basically every workflow in construction, right? Like whether it's a schedule change or a design change or trade damage out on the job site or you're working overtime, you know, everything funnels back to like a change. And, you know, again, it touches all different stakeholders. So it's a really broad question, but like particularly how it relates to like our philosophy on product development, you know, one part of our application, one part of the change order workflow is field directed extra work, and which is primarily done on like a time and material basis. And there's a standard workflow across our industry where you write down the extra work, the GC or whoever's supervising the work signs off on it and verifies, yes, you did that scope of work, but we're not agreeing to like the cost or anything like that. And so, you know, but that process is super painful. It's one of my biggest pain points in my career, is just like, what the heck have we signed? Who's priced it? What's the cost exposure? And so the one of the big, you know, pain points we solve is like, we give the foreman a really easy mobile app to document the extra work and give a really easy workflow for the superintendent to sign off on it. But the bigger problem it solves in the back office is complete visibility, because those things are automatically logged rather than waiting for the paper document to come back or like a fillable PDF form to be saved and downloaded and sent. But in order to get that outcome and solve the problem for the back office, you have to make it insanely easy for the foreman to actually do that work and use the mobile app. And so I think, you know, that's an example of where my background and having like empathy for the field and one of our core values at the company is like, keep it simple. And, you know, I think that's driven reason why I think we're the leader in digital T&M tags today is like, we just focus on making it as simple as humanly possible to automate that workflow. So that's just, I think, one of many examples.
And what I love about it and why I find myself talking about you guys all the time is because you are bridging that gap between the needs of the trade and the needs of the GC. And kind of, I'm always curious of like, which side of the coin kind of did you approach it from? Like, was it always kind of, hey, at the end of the day, the GC is going to have to manage this stuff. And if we don't make it easier for the trade, we're never going to get by. So like that was kind of the ethos of it. Or was more like, hey, trades have all this ability to capture all this data and make their lives more efficient. And then kind of there may or may not be a pitch to kind of the whole trade contractor's own benefit to using this product. Like, are you seeing benefit on both sides? Is it mostly just the GCs that benefit and the trades find it easy to use? What are you seeing in that progression?
Yeah, I mean, about 75% of our customers are specialty contractors. And so we have specialty contractors who use ClearStory across their whole company. So we have, and then about, 20, and this is by like count of customers. So obviously the count of specialty contractors is way larger than the count of general contractors. But what's cool about ClearStory and just the change order process in whole is like, there's a way to make it better for everyone and not have any trade-offs between each stakeholder. And so when it comes to change orders for a specialty contractor, it's primarily revenue, right? It's your top line revenue that you're trying to get recouped. When it comes to a general contractor, it's cost, right? These changes represent cost, but you also have a budget you're trying to reconcile with your client. And the client's trying to understand, hey, what allowances and contingencies do we have remaining? And again, the way you draw down those allowances for the most part is from change orders. And so really like what's cool about ClearStory is like we give the subcontractors the tools to process this stuff faster in a more organized and simple format. And I built it selfishly as a GC of like, hey, this is the easiest way to paint this picture for your GC, which helps the GC reduce risk and understand their cost exposure. And then what that does is allows the owner to be like, okay, I have the full picture, and it allows the GC to help reconcile those allowances. Because during a project, there's always, if it's a GMP contract, there's savings that, depending on how they've negotiated it, that the client is going to get because it's their money. But what happens so often is the GC's nervous about their cost exposure. So they hang on to those allowances to the very end. And then they give their client back a bunch of money, which sometimes can be great. But oftentimes the client would want to spend that money while they have it budgeted to maximize the value of this asset they're building that's going to last for 30 years, right? Because if they don't make those upgrades during the project, then they have to go do a remodel to make any of those changes. And so like, so it's cool is with ClearStory is like there's incentives for everyone to use the platform. For subs, like the ROI with ClearStory without being, there's a bunch of negative connotations with change orders, but in reality, most subs just simply want to get paid on the extra work they're doing and get paid in a timely manner. And the reason why they overinflate changes is because they're worried they're going to get negotiated down or their cash flow is going to be delayed for 180 or days or a year. But if we give the tools to do this efficiently and transparently, it actually changes that dynamic quite a bit. So I think that's a really unique thing for ClearStory. And one thing I'll mention too is when we set out to build the product, we decided very early on the only way this would work for a general contractor is if it's easy for the subcontractors to like adopt and use the product. And then on top of that, the only way a network works in construction, because Turner, they hire the largest specialty contractors in the country, but they also hire the smallest. And so when they're using it on a project, it has to work for like a small mom and pop subcontractor the same way it would for you know, one of our other customers, Performance Contracting Group. So it's like, how the heck do you build a product that every stakeholder can use and remove all the friction so they can stand it up on a 6-week tenant improvement project or a 5-year data center? And so somehow over the last 8 years, we've accomplished that. But that was like the challenge of, it's not an easy product to go build, as it turns out.
No, it sounds like on the outside that it would be easy, but it really isn't. And I think you're hitting on something too over time that's always been this, there's a negative connotation to change orders when, you know, just like the same thing with RFIs. It's like, well, honestly, it's a question, right? That's an RFI. Honestly, a change order is alerting somebody to something that either we didn't plan on or that we need to get done. And good trade contractors actually want this kind of visibility for exactly what you're saying. They want to limit the exposure. They know how the process works and they want to get moving. The worst thing that can happen with change orders is to take the risk of moving ahead on something to keep the project moving and not have it be approved, not have it be visible to everybody. You know, and those, I mean, when you think about how those projects are changing and where the scopes are changing to, I mean, a lot of that is going to a limited number of, you know, mechanical or electrical, in most cases, electrical, it's landing on their shoulders. And so the clarity of information and the speed of information can increase the relationship. It's a relationship business. You said it. Every crew operates different. Every group operates different, but ultimately it's a relationship. And this is a tool to improve the relationship. And I think more importantly, prevent the paperwork slowing down the work, because we can't slow down the work.
Well, the other thing that, like, I think there's so many different, you know, because again, change orders are like the focal point of so many things in construction. But the other like common sort of misunderstanding is, while a lot of change orders are like purely design change directives and things like that, a lot of it's actually just design evolution, right? Because right now in construction, lead times are really long, projects are moving faster, everyone wants to build, you know, quickly, get those items released. And so what winds up happening is, especially with GMP contracts, is the GC's brought in early, you're going through pre-construction. But what the architect is doing is they're saying, hey, like, how soon can you get these trades awarded? Because like for the millwork contract, like I want to work with the millwork contractor to understand the design details of how we're going to build the millwork. And by the way, we also want to get some of the material released. And so what winds up happening as a GC is you have to pick a point in time where we got to award a contract so we can bring that trade partner in who has all this specialized knowledge on that trade and work with them to finalize the design, which is great. And that's the collaboration we want in the industry. But the challenge is, as soon as they're under a contract, it's no longer a competitive bid situation. And every change in design evolution is going to have some cost. And so again, back to your point, Jeff, of like speeding up the time to visibility is really what like every GC is under pressure on right now. Because I gave the millwork example, but that happens with structural steel. Like, you got to get the steel awarded, get the materials on order, but then you're also finalizing the shop drawings and everything else behind it, which not only triggers changes within the structural steel package, but it triggers changes in the drywall package and every other trade that's affected by that scope.
Well, and let's use the example that we've been using of drywall and MEP, of kind of this interior, and just the simple resequencing of work, because everything you just said is completely true. And you get guys on board early, and then they got to get pricing based on an assumption of, you know, drywall going before MEP. And then all of a sudden, you know, your ductwork's up in the ceiling before framing. And how do you, at that point, as a framer, estimate the cost impact of that said resequencing? Because we know it's slower when somebody went in before you, but how much slower? Like, is there a coefficient? Like, again, I mean, there is no answer to that. I mean, that's what we were debating, but I'm curious, yeah, like how close you guys are, or if those are discussions that are happening on the pure resequencing side of cost and trying to get to some numbers of how do we quantify that stuff.
It's challenging to do. One of the features we just released is this AI reason category feature. So every change you submit automatically gets categorized. And a lot of systems, you know, have like drop-down selects where you can like categorize the change. But what's unique about ClearSure is like when you're using a change order management software, which is what we work alongside, like we don't replace your traditional change order management software. So like if you're using, you know, Procore Financials or Vista or CMIC or whatever, the job of ClearStory is to capture all your changes at the granular level and then ensure, like we have a bunch of reports in the software to ensure you have everything in that system. And that's really the main driver of ClearStory. But what, where we're uniquely positioned is a lot of times you receive a change, you reject it, and it sometimes doesn't even hit your financial system, right? And so there's data that's like lost effectively. And so with ClearStory, it's like we're more similar to like your personal finance tool where you see every expense you've made. And so like when it comes to change orders, you see literally every COR that's been sent to you. And as a subcontractor, you see everything you've been sent across all your projects and your whole company. And so with this reason category feature, AI automatically categorizes every COR you've received. And then just like in your personal finance tool, you could look at categories of all the CORs you've received. And so this is something relatively new we've launched, but the whole goal is, you know, there's some pretty cool in-app reporting we have like on a project level and on a company level. So you can get trends on like, especially on a project level, if you're 18 months into the project and most of your change orders are still design changes, it's like a moment to pause and have a conversation with the architect. But you might, you know, find that a lot of them are overtime change orders or trade damage or whatever. And then you can decide like, are we getting value from that overtime, et cetera. But then on a company level, the goal of this feature is so that, you know, they can take our data into their data warehouse or wherever they're doing business intelligence, hook it up to an agent, and start round tripping that data to different parts of the business. So like when you're planning your next hospital project and you've been using ClearStory, you can say, hey, on a hospital project of this size, how many change orders do we actually wind up with at the end of the job? And therefore, what allowances, you know, should I carry and why? And it's shockingly a data set that like even the most sophisticated GCs we work with don't actually have today. So it's a really interesting. And then to your question, Nathan, it kind of opens up the door as well for some like predictive analytics and things like that in the future.
So yeah, to look at how that resequencing or, you know, we're talking about equipment now and equipment lead times and, you know, hey, we need to buy out the electrical scope early and order transformers, order everything we need ahead of time, or we're going to be in real trouble. I mean, it's switch boxes, et cetera. Like, oh, great, we got everything, but we can't electrify the place. And by the way, the speed at which our hyperscalers are changing and what they want from a sizing perspective, that's going to be something that, hey, listen, we see this from early design to here. Here's some of the trends. And, you know, I like the idea, too, that you're not trying to replace the change order platform that people are using. What you're trying to replace is the paper in the truck. It's the handshake and which are great, right? We need the handshake, but we need to capture it so that data can tell us over time what really happens, right? I think that goes back to why you're called what you're called, right? Every project has a story. But it's a very incomplete, a very telephone game story that becomes very different depending on where you are in that telephone game. But this gives us an ability to, you know, mark those chapters in the story and tell it as it goes. And then hopefully in the end, flip back. That's where I want to go with it. Like, if it goes well for ClearStory in the long run, what does that look like for construction companies? What does that look like for trades, for owners? You know, what would great look like for ClearStory in the end?
Yeah. Well, it's you know, our focus is we want to become this sort of orchestration layer between companies when it comes to out of contract work. And I think we have like a pretty clear path to sort of becoming the industry standard. So it's like if you're sharing a change order, you're doing it through ClearStory. And I think we're already like, you know, somewhat there. You know, there's the industry is very, very, very large, but we work with, I think it's like 75% of the ENR top 25 today. And so like we're getting to that inflection point where like, you know, there's I think 14 or 15,000 construction companies that have ClearStory accounts today. I think we're doing like $3.5 billion a month in like change order volume, like submitted through the platform. So we're reaching like a pretty big scale. It's still a huge industry. So we feel like we're still just like scratching the surface. And a large part of our usage is is like a, you know, when you get invited, you get free access to ClearStory. And so that's been like the stated objectives kind of since day one, is like create this transparency and workflow layer across the industry. And it's agnostic to what you're using for financials internally. So again, like the GCs have their own set of tools, the subcontractors have their own set of tools. And, you know, really the inbox is where change order communication and workflow is like primarily happening today. And, you know, other industries have solved this problem. Like there's a, you know, you may be familiar with like bill.com, which is like a workflow layer for accounts receivable and accounts payable. And it works alongside your ERP or financial system, right? We're like a really similar concept, but for change orders and out of contract work. What I'm excited about too is like, you know, we started the company in 2018, like AI wasn't a thing. We weren't thinking about AI and how that could also help. And even over the last, like, honestly, like 4 months, our thinking on how AI can also accelerate this workflow has greatly changed as well. And so, you know, we launched our first series of AI features over the last, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 months. And, you know, one challenge, if there's any other construction tech companies listening to this, like one of the challenges of construction tech and the reason why our industry is perceived, which I disagree with, but there's structural reasons why we don't adopt technology fast. And that's because most technology gets adopted when a new job starts up, right? And so just by that nature, piloting software takes a fair amount of time. And so, but for us, oftentimes when we talk to a project team, they're in the middle of a job, they're stressed out about change orders, they don't have a good understanding of what their exposure is. That's when they want ClearStory the most. And so years ago, we built like a bulk import tool where you can like put your change order log in our Excel import and import it. And we've done that with hundreds of projects where they can get an active job into ClearStory, get that visibility. But one of the first AI features we built was like an AI import. So you can send, if you're a GC, you can send it any subcontractor's change order log. It'll analyze the data, map it to our columns, and import it. So, you know, it's an activity that took 20, 30 minutes per change order log in our software. And now it's like, you can do it in a minute. You know, you just upload the change order log and analyzes it. So that was one of the first AI features we built. But what we have right now in beta that we're starting to enable for our customers for beta testing is kind of these like four agents that make up the change order, a lot of the change order workflow. So the first one is we have a tool called change notifications in ClearStory where you can send out a design change to your subcontractors, set a deadline of when the pricing's due, track who's opened it, who's received it, who's responded. And so we're building an agent that analyzes that design change for the user, flags things for them, helps them estimate the cost before they send it out. But then it fills in the change notification form for them automatically in ClearStory. Then it goes out to the subcontractors. For the subcontractors, what we're building, and for the GC as well, is a change order pricing agent. So if they get that design change, they can put it into our agent and it'll help them draft a change order request. This is also useful for like really simple change orders. Like we have a voice to text ability in this agent where it's like, if it's a simple overtime change order where you have 10 crew members working overtime, you know, today you either got to fill in an Excel spreadsheet or you got to, you know, use your change order software to type something up. They can automatically do that. And then for the subcontractors, we're also working on a mobile app agent for creating field for T&M tickets in the field. It does like Spanish translation, stuff like that. But then I think where it all connects together is we have this in beta testing. It's pretty cool, is a change order review agent. So today in ClearStory, you can open up a change order, you can redline it, you can mark it up, you can request revisions back from the subcontractor, you can track all the versions. But we're building an agent in that automatically does that review. And the GC can set up a checklist of the items they want the agent to review. And what's so powerful about that is for the paying subcontractors, they're going to have a pre-submission check that tells them if they're going to pass the GC's checklist before they even submit it. And so what reason why I'm laying all this out there is like, again, cycle time and change orders is where the subs get hurt in cash flow. The GC has risk because they don't know what's out there. And then the owner can't make decisions. And so all of this is like human in the loop, but AI is going to do all that really manual work. And I think the cycle time, it has an ability to have the cycle time on change orders dramatically decrease across the industry, which I think will be an exciting opportunity for everyone.
Man, I mean, you hit on a couple of very hot button, obviously AI, and we can talk about that forever. But before, I don't want to skip over the importance of standards. You mentioned standards once, because I had this written down. I do think you guys are kind of in a place to set a standard, similar to how Procore kind of set a lot of the standards for RFI API, you know, endpoints and different things like that, that have now just become de facto standards. But when it comes to some of these categories, I know at the integration summit, we were talking about at a high level, stipulated versus unstipulated versus your field directed. But you were also mentioning even kind of more granular categories. Like, is that stuff that you guys are pushing back on the industry of saying like, no, we should define a particular set of them? Or is there any interest in trying to publish standards around that? Or has that even been crossed your mind yet? Because it's crossed mine.
Yeah. You know, we it's so interesting. Like when we started building the reason category feature, we met with like a lot of our big GC customers and subcontractors, really everyone. And when we initially planned to build the feature, we were planning on making it rigid. So it was like, hey, we were going to predefine this list of reason categories, have it done across the industry. When it came down to it, it just felt like it was going to be too much, like a lot up front for us to like define for the industry. So the way we did it is we did set a list of like predefined categories that's live in every ClearStory account. But as a customer, you have the ability to like adjust the reason categories based on what you want it to be for your company. The trade-off for us, because I think what a lot of our customers really want is like industry benchmarking so they can compare how their projects are doing to theirs. Obviously, all of our data is like anonymized and stuff like that. And our concern with making them customizable was that how would we do that benchmarking? But that's where AI is so powerful, is like it can directionally get it all mapped together, even if there's a lot of changes. So with everything, like we still use our baseline category, so we'll still be able to do that like benchmarking, but it gives the customers the flexibility to set it up like how they want.
Yeah, so not completely getting out ahead, especially as a software developer, and trying to define that for everybody is going to be really hard. It does become a de facto standard over time, but I think we're going to have a little bit more flexibility in the AI world. But it's interesting to hear the speed to delivery and speeding up the cycle time. Because you said it earlier, like I disagree with the way people look at the industry as well, but it's not untrue that we haven't seen a performance increase, like a productivity increase as a whole of the industry. But I think that's because we don't look at it for its parts. And this is one of them, right? This is a part that quote unquote slows productivity, but it's a cycle time on decision-making. And ultimately, some of our biggest problems with productivity aren't our capabilities, it's our decision-making abilities and ability to choose those things. But I also like you tied it back. I don't think people really understand that a contingency in a GMP project and giving a sum of money back at the end isn't always a good thing. You know, it's like having a budget for anything in your organization along the way and getting, how many of you at the end of the year, it's like December and you're like, oh, wow, I have, you know, this left in my budget. I better spend it or I won't get it again next year, right? Well, on a construction project, that's exponential because it requires rework or rebuild or whatever it might be, you know, a tenant improvement on an area. And that's going to be twice as expensive as if, hey, I know it along the way. So have you seen instances and in maybe where people can think about how does that like impact? What are some of those things that an owner might do that they're holding back on that they're going to do because now they know, hey, I have visibility over my total costs?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be different on every job. But yeah, I mean, and don't get me wrong, like it's great to give money back at the end of the job. So like that should be a goal of, you know, for every GC. But again, it's like the reason we give money back is because we're holding back on, you know, our confidence level on, you know, how much we need that money all the way till the end of the job. Because what happens a lot in closeout is when you finally go through all the change orders, really understand your cost exposure, and then do your final contingency drawdown, and you're like, oh, cool, we actually had 500 grand left. Like, look, this is going to be amazing. We'll give it back to the client. And the client's like, well, yeah, but we were evaluating those two different carpet options. And like, I would have chose to hire one if I knew I was getting 500 grand back at the end of the job. And so there's just like a lot of little things like that where, you know, the owner's making trade-offs constantly, especially going back to the beginning of the project, when you're locking in that GMP and what the cost certainty level is of every evolution of that design, right? And so yeah, the more cost certainty you can have is always like going to be a net benefit to really everyone.
And like you said, the more visibility when it's time to make that decision on that type of flooring, on other finishes that you might be looking at, you know, things that, and people are like, oh, flooring, so you have nicer, you have nicer carpet. No, actually, in many cases, the tile you pick, the carpeting you pick, the flooring you pick, based on the cost of it, it could be how long it lives and how long then you have to go back and rip that carpet up and change it out, or that tile is going to chip and break and how much you've got to go back and do that. These are like not immaterial decisions that an owner would like to make based on the understanding. Yes, we want to give you some money back, but there is also money that we want to spend because, exactly like you said, there's trade-offs to the long-term operation of a building. And you're cutting costs at a time when you didn't need to, because again, you just didn't have the visibility.
Because you took a hard bid mindset into a GMP contract. And like, how often is that the root cause? Is that we think relationship is one thing, we make an assumption of what the owner wants. And I think that's a lot of what I was hearing, Cameron, is that it's both. If you don't have the data, you can't make a good decision, but also we often make assumptions on what the other side thinks or wants and don't bother to ask them. And so the more there is that openness, that kind of safety, that vulnerability to have those conversations, like it's a yes and, it's both things. I don't know. What do you think, Cameron?
Well, and just to be clear, I mean, ClearShore is not like a silver bullet where you're going to just give away all your contingency and every allowance, right? But it is going to absolutely give you a higher level of certainty of where you stand at that moment in time and what you think is left out there in the job. So it's absolutely going to give you more confidence to make those decisions. Because a big part of holding on to contingency is you're safeguarding like the unknown, right? And you're trying to protect your client. So it's a big balance. So I'm not just saying like, hey, with ClearStore, you make every upgrade on the project, but you have a higher level of certainty for sure to go do that. And I think like, Jeff, you kind of touched on it a minute ago. This is like an observation I've had more clarity on, you know, selling to, you know, so many different companies, and we get so much feedback from our different sales reps and customer success teams. And when it comes to technology in construction, there is a big, big gap between what innovation teams or technology groups or the CIO understands of what their project managers are actually doing. And there's also a little bit of like PMs, like when we go pitch our software to like a company, and let's say they have the CIO in the room and a project manager. Let me separate this slightly. So let's say we first just pitch to the innovation and technology group. We're going to say, hey, we're this change order software. We automatically capture everything. We're going to give your PMs efficiency, time back. You know, our findings are that PMs are spending an average of 10 hours a week on the change order process, which, yes, that is a real like stat we get back from our customers. And they're going to say, no, we've already bought change order software. Like we have change order software. Why would we need something else? And it's like, do you guys understand like what actually goes on in a PM's inbox and what a project engineer does to manually review change orders? You know, and then we go talk to the PM team, and it's like, you know, visceral response of like the software. But then sometimes when we talk to them together, there's like this reluctance of the PM to be like, yeah, my process is actually this inefficient, right? So there's just this interesting dynamic, but, and I don't think it's just our software, but I do think like, and it's not an easy problem to solve, but the companies we see that do it best, a lot of their innovation groups come from project management teams and then move into that role. So they have that like deep empathy and understanding of what, like truly what those workflows are. But anyways, that's just another observation I see quite a bit.
You hit on something there, and I think you're absolutely right. And I also think it's why, if you're out there in the innovation space, and you're sitting at a construction company or a trade contractor doing that role, you really need to rethink what you're doing. You're a business analyst that has to stop thinking, oh, I know a problem, I have a system that solves a problem. And you have to analyze how work is actually getting done. And, you know, and also if you're the owner of that company or you're leading that company, you have to decide, is your head of innovation or your innovation arm your marketing arm? Or is it a functional productivity arm? And I get to say that from where I sit. Not a lot of people get to say that, but I want, like, you, I ask people to do this all the time. Hold the mirror up. By the way, a great innovation department that's out there doing it for marketing and getting more work for your company and getting your name out there, that's, brand is important. Those things are important. Those things are powerful. But if you're looking at somebody who's going to do this to actually improve the process and improve the work that's going on, they need to wear a completely different hat. They either have to have those experiences, like you said, Cameron, or I actually challenge, they need a whole different set, which is an understanding of how businesses work. You know, I'm coming off of a conversation we had yesterday, Nathan, with a guest coming up, that it's really about like getting to the root cause of the problems and being okay looking for those inefficiencies, those areas where it's like, hey, we have a system for this, but actually that's not how the work gets done. Like, hey, there's all of this crap happening before we get to your system. So we're not talking, like you said, I'm not talking about replacing my CMIC. I'm not Procore Financials, those things. I'm saying all the stuff before that is being done this way. Let's analyze how it's getting done and let's see if we can do it better.
And in the world of value stream mapping and theory of constraints, is like that gateway, that point from a clear story to a Sage or a Plexus or a wherever it's going to, can be that point of quality check, that point of whatever. Like that's where your rules get enacted, where it's like everything before that could be a million different ways. But at the point where it gets to here, it's got to meet A, B, and C. And this is why. I mean, I think so many of our change initiatives are missing that clear story, no pun intended, of why we're even doing this in the first place, right? And I think that's so important to any change initiative with adopting technology, especially when it relates to change order. So yeah, man, so many, just many entendres.
And I know I get to say those things. So I just want to wrap it up with, I want to thank our boy Taylor for reconnecting us. I don't know if you want to tell that story or not, but it was really cool to me to hear how all those things came together. And then I want to make sure you give everybody a chance to figure out and connect with you guys and where you are, Cameron.
Yeah, oh, definitely. No, this is a full circle thing. It was pretty funny. We connected with you or James years ago, and one of our champions at Turner Construction, Nadine Carew, we like introduced you guys to, and she came on the pod, and she, you know, I've known her for years now. We studied abroad. I met her at the study abroad thing in college for the construction management department. And then she worked at Turner. I went to DevCon. She was on the Turner DevCon joint venture for the 49ers stadium. So we kind of reconnected a little bit there. But, you know, that's just how the industry works too. It's like when you start a software company, especially if you've come from the industry, like all I did was leverage my network. You know, and that's really what our industry is all about. And, as what's been so cool about starting the company is like the amount of people I've met and the conversations I've had, you know, it's just exponentially grown. Right. And so with Nadine, she came on your guys' pod, I don't know, probably like 5 or 6 years ago. And she gave a little plug for Clear Story. We were Xtracker back then. And this guy named Taylor Edwards, listened to your guys' podcast, because of that, started using Clear Story on some Turner jobs out in Denver at the airport, and became a power user. And he kind of approached us at one point. He's like, hey, like, you guys hiring at all? And so anyways, he ended up joining the company. Turner, we didn't poach anybody. He came to us, and now he runs our GC customer success team. And he's been amazing, huge value add to the company. And so, yeah, so if it weren't for the Contact Crew pod, I don't know if Taylor would be at Clear Story today. And it sounds like Taylor spent some time with both of you guys a couple of weeks ago.
Huge impact on the changes team with Chad Pearson and Plexus and others. And so, yeah, we got that video and report coming out here shortly.
We're launching an integration with Plexus here soon too, which is exciting.
See, you never know what comes out of it. And he did a wonderful job and did reconnect us and said, hey, and I was like, we haven't had Cameron on, and reminded me of all of it. So look at that. Taylor, thanks for getting us back together. And Cameron, thanks for taking the time and sitting down with us and sending him to the AEC Integration Summit. I think we really value having new players, new people, new mindsets. And he did do a really good job of bringing a fundamental understanding of what the change order process is from the perspective of someone who did it and now someone who's working on it, which is kind of what the Integration Summit's all about, is having all the perspectives we can possibly get at the table to work on moving problems ahead. So look forward to seeing that report come out and some other things that came out of it. Tell people where they can go connect with you, Cameron.
Yeah, real quick, one thing I mentioned, because it just popped in my mind because you said that. Obviously, I'm sure tons of construction tech companies and founders listen to the pod. And what we found extremely successful, and a lot of it was because actually we hired Taylor and we saw how successful he was, is our 100% of our customer success team is people from the industry. And just their ability to go connect with a customer, they can quickly understand their change order process, map to how ClearStory works, has just been huge. And like with Taylor and his team, like some of the large GCs that we roll out with, like we got feedback from one of the EVPs at a top 10 GC, and he was like, not only was it great rolling out ClearStory, he's like, every team that got trained through the ClearStory team felt like they were getting like change order management 101, like best practice training. And so I've been really just proud of that. And, but I would encourage other contact companies to think about that for the teams they're hiring, because there's so many smart people in construction, and you know, some of them want to do something other than just like managing projects and stuff like that. And it's a great way to keep them in the industry, but on kind of a different side of it. So I figured I would just throw that in there.
I'm going to go further with that plug, because I've said this a long time ago, because way back before there was this idea of like, I'm tired of tech poaching my people, quote unquote. And you said it earlier. And I challenged them and said two things. One, those people, if they want to leave, they need careers. They need to grow. They need an opportunity. And the biggest indicator of the health of a technology industry supporting an industry is the free flow of people back and forth, because they bring that knowledge through. That's actually like the whole boomerang idea of going from from industry to technology to industry. The cross-pollination benefits all of us. So I highly support it, especially because you just said it. And we've seen a lot of them. They leave the industry to go do something else when we could have valued them and kept them. So I'll double down on that. And I love the 101 idea, because honestly, in the future, that is what great technology companies are going to be able to do, is bring that standardization of process and knowledge of how it's done across the industry, not just in your little portion of it. So awesome. Now tell people where to go to find you, and we'll wrap her up for the day.
The best way to find me is just, you know, connect me on LinkedIn, shoot me a note, or connect with one of our team members too. You know, like if you want to get a demo, you can certainly message me. I'm not the best, it turns out, in the company anymore at doing demos. So, you know, contact one of our, you can go to our website or a LinkedIn message. And, you know, I'm also just passionate about this industry and technology and innovation too. So I'm always happy to like talk to other entrepreneurs or people who are thinking about leaving construction and getting into technology or doing their own startup. You know, I think that's where, especially with the AI tools we have today, that's where a ton of innovation is going to come, is people building their own software. And it's so much easier than when I attempted to do it in 2018. So yeah, but LinkedIn's probably the easiest way.
That's great. And I'll double down. I mean, 95 people, 8 years in the business. That's success from this side. So keep it up out there. And I'm sure people will connect with you. Nathan, it's always great to sit down with you, man. I'm excited for one more episode.
Man, great discussion. Yeah, I'm going to go swing some clubs.
Nice. Good luck. Hit them straight.
I hope you bring up a couple extra sleeves of balls. Don't chase them for too long.
We'll send you some ClearStory golf balls. How about that?
Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Cameron Page. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.